an interesting gubernatorial race this year, to say the least, in Illinois. And this morning, from the Libertarian Party, Grayson Cash Jackson is joining us. He's the gubernatorial candidate for the Libertarian Party. First off, Cash, good to talk to you again, pal. You been all right?
Good morning, man. I've been great.
Yeah. Well, I figured you were great whenever I saw that you submitted like twice the number of signatures you needed to get it on the ballot back in June.
Yes, sir. You know what? We put in the work, we put in the effort, and I'm proud to say that our signature collection wasn't funded by unions.
That's one point there, but I think the number is the thing that I find interesting, because we've learned, right, in Illinois, this is a great, it's a weak point in the chain, we'll call it. Somebody will go after those signatures, and we've seen a lot of this in the last few years. People knocked off the ballots because their signatures were questioned. They had, by the time they were challenged, insufficient to be included on the ballot. You wanted to overcome that obstacle and be sure of it.
Well, we did. It's a sad note that we have to spend as much resources and manpower as what we do to acquire enough signatures so that we're not challenged. And you know, it's a delay tactic by Republicans and Democrats to keep third parties from running their campaigns. So in past election cycles, we got to spend time and energy down in Springfield defending our signatures, ultimately many times to still get onto the ballot, but we lose, 6 to 8 weeks of campaigning.
Right.
And we have to divert a lot of time and energy to that. And it's just a way where they can keep us from spreading our message.
As a libertarian, I'd like you to point out to me a fundamental difference between you and the Republicans and you and the Democrats. And I'm not talking philosophy. I'd like you, into particular, Cash, to take an issue that demonstrates your distinct difference from either a Republican or Democrat.
Gay marriage. Government has no business in the institution of marriage, period. They shouldn't tell you what you can or can't do with another consenting adult. Both are very authoritarian, and they want to dictate to another group of people how they're supposed to live. I want all people to live however they want to, as long as they're not harming other people. And so we could talk about that with abortion. We could talk about that with cannabis. You know what? There should be no more regulation for cannabis than what there is for a tomato plant. Okay? And the way that government approaches that, historically, of course, has been criminal. My field operations director was serving a 30-year sentence. Young man got out. He did about 12 years. He got out of prison, and I made him my field operations director, and now he's going to Stanford. We've gotten it wrong for decades, and both parties are guilty of that. The libertarian principle is, that never would have occurred.
You know, when you look at what voters say they're interested in the upcoming election is immigration. And you think, well, that's a federal issue. Well, not in Illinois. I think one of the figures I read over the last week, that I think when it comes to immigration in this country and where people come after they're across the border, I think Illinois is third.
Yeah, I think we're pretty large there. And immigration is an issue. And I support the federal government that they need to do a better job with immigration, with tightening up our borders. I know many people, they'll kind of throw out there, well, libertarians are for open borders. I won't disagree that some libertarians are for open borders, but I personally am not for open borders. I am for having a more streamlined immigration process where it doesn't take years and years and years. And as an example, I've got a good friend of mine right here. He's stationed here at the Naval Base up here. He and I served together before. He's from Jamaica, and he's been working for years to try and get his wife here, immigrated legally. I mean, here we've got an active duty service member that's spent about 20 years in the military so far, and it's taking him years to try and get his wife here. There's a problem with the federal immigration process that they need to work towards, and we need to work on ours as well here in Illinois and what we're, how we're functioning with that process.
You know what I find interesting, Cash, when you're talking about Jamaica and the U.S. military, that the history the U.S. military has played in immigration is very interesting, and we have always had a very warm reception for people who came south of the border into the United States who went into the U.S. Army, and this started back in, I think, early 1800s.
Right.
I mean, there's a really long kind of action as military playing a role in immigration that I think goes maybe underappreciated, especially when it comes to getting your citizenship.
Yeah, you make a great point. And something else I'd like to illustrate is that So whenever I was stationed here between 2009 to 2012, and I was a drill instructor or a recruit division commander, as we're known, I watched them naturalize these young men and women in a period of several months. Now, why does it take, years in some instances and thousands and thousands of dollars to get these people naturalized when I watch them do it time and again within a few months? I think that they have the ability. I just think that there's probably money wrapped up inside the immigration process that we're not aware of. And I know for some people coming from different countries, it can be more difficult with background checks and what have you. But I have no doubt that they could streamline that process, make it a little bit easier for those that, you know, maybe have been here on a work visa and they've been working and, you know, and they want to become U.S. citizens. And that's what I'd like to work towards. I'd like to work towards just some common sense approaches where we can consider the fact that we've got, you know, men and women that come here and they serve our country honorably. And again, some of those that have been in the military for a long time, even then it takes, you know, a significant amount of time to get them naturalized. And I don't understand that. But for those that are here, that are working, that are contributing, look, I mean, if we can implement more work visas and we can keep families together, that's what I would prefer to do. I'm real big on family. If anybody, reads anything about me, the family unit is the most important structure in our society, and we have to protect that. And I believe in protecting that for other people as well.
What about, do you believe that the last piece of legislation the governor signed on this, he said it's not a sanctuary status. I mean, what is your thoughts from a libertarian standpoint status on sanctuary status for communities, counties? I know Bloomington was trying to do something about welcoming immigrants. They couldn't get the city council even together to vote for that. I mean, your thoughts on sanctuary status, federal funds, and that whole ball of wax?
Well, it is. It is one gigantic mess that they have created there. One thing that I'm opposed to is continuous federal overreach. I like for states and local communities to operate as autonomously as humanly possible, but there's also a line to be drawn where you haven't created a structure and an incentive for people to flood here illegally. And I think that that's where we're not finding that balance, is that, you know, we're incentivizing in some cases people to flood into cities because, you know, we are so lax and lenient on our immigration. But then on the other hand, you know, we have other places where it is, you know, I think it's just overly strict. And people want to see it as a black and white issue. I don't see it as a black and white issue. And again, you know, using examples like men and women who have served in the military, that we have to find some common ground there and some middle ground where we have a good balance of people immigrating here legally and streamlining that process so they don't feel that they have to do it illegally while not breaking apart families. Right. You know, again, I'm just really opposed to splitting families apart. And I know one of the common arguments that people make is, well, if you, get arrested, you go to jail, you break the law, you're separated from your children. And I agree with that sentiment. However, being in the United States, normally you've already got a family structure, you've got a community, you've got friends, you've got a church, you have people that you can leave your children with. And look, through my activism to try and reform family law, I understand some of the dynamics here. And the states make money through federal subsidies, breaking families apart. And a lot of people aren't going to agree with me on this because they've never researched it and they've never understood, you know, the federal incentives out of Title IV funding. And that's something that we should be aware of, that our government has been breaking American families apart for decades and nobody's saying anything about that.
Right.
You know, to me, it's a travesty what's happening on the border in all respects. But right here in our own country, in our own state, they've been doing it to American families for decades. And it's something that really angers me, and it's something I want to put a stop to.
Right. And basically subsidizing breaking up families on a federal level. I mean, I can see that. Now, here's interesting. We're speaking this morning, Libertarian gubernatorial candidate for Illinois, Cash Jackson. You know, we were talking about immigration, sanctuary city status. Now, if you'd asked me maybe, I don't know, 7-9 months back, what I would have thought were the number one issue, and I would have said, boy, it might be guns. I mean, especially after the Parkland shooting, all right?
Right.
When it comes to this, you know, we've seen a lot of different laws proposed here in Springfield, especially when it comes to gun stores. And I know I want to kind of hit this subject pretty quick in Illinois, but, you know, when it comes to Southern Illinois, guns are not the issue. They are, you know, after the Dan Ryan being shut down to stand against violence, I thought that was kind of like preaching to the choir. Go to the neighborhood right. where the violence occurs if you want to protest, make a point there. But they closed down Dan Ryan yesterday, saying that that road was built to segregate the black neighborhood from the white neighborhood. That's why that was done, if people didn't know. So when it comes to guns in Illinois and FOID cards sounds to me like, you know, when I listened to you saying a couple of moments ago you're against federal government overreach, that sounds to me like state overreach.
It is. It's absolutely state overreach, and it's an infringement upon a constitutionally protected right. And again, as libertarians, we want minimal government involvement. Not that we shouldn't have some government. I'm okay with that, but it is state overreach. And, you know, I would be okay with taking existing individuals that have a FOID card and making it into a concealed carry license.
That's interesting.
You know, simply because of how many background checks are being ran on these individuals. And I think that if, you know, we could look at actual common sense measures and have an honest discussion, we should be honest enough with ourselves to say, Deerfield had no business trying to institute a ban on AR-15s when nobody's even been killed in Deerfield with an AR-15. And we should be able to say that, why are we even talking about bump stocks when I don't know of any murder that has occurred in the state of Illinois where a bump stock was used? I mean, it's feel-good legislation that really does nothing to protect our communities because we don't get to the root causes. We want to talk about root causes. Let's talk about the 20 million American children growing up in our nation absent their biological father. Let's talk about those. Let's talk about how many young men and women growing up in the South and West Side of Chicago and East St. Louis are growing up in a single-parent home and oftentimes leaving the mom to have to work 1, 2, 3 jobs and leaving these kids to fend for themselves. It's no surprise that we have the gangs that we do because we have misguided children. They're at far greater risk of having emotional, mental disorders as a result of this. They're at far more risk of dropping out of high school, living on welfare, getting pregnant as a teenager, all these high-risk categories that are causing systemic economic and societal issues we're not addressing. Yeah. The war on drugs was a failed policy. It separated millions of parents away from their children, and right, wrong, or indifferent, what we created is what we're looking at in East St. Louis and the South and West Side of Chicago. And if we want to begin to fix that crime, we have to reinstitute the family unit, have personal responsibility, and quit batting around meaningless legislation that's not honestly going to address the root causes.
You know, the idea here that we've gotten this far into the interview and not talked about money is pretty phenomenal. When we have last time I checked was on Monday, $6.5 billion backlog on bills. But more interestingly enough, the suggestion in the Federal Reserve Bank that we have a 1% statewide property tax to pay for pensions, saying that way we have this isolated money that will go to pensions. It'll take 30 to 50 years. But you and I both know that once that source of income is discovered and kept in place, they'll continue to make pension promises that we can't keep, and it'll never go away. That's my honest opinion. It will not go away if they ever do it. Your thoughts, statewide, nationwide property tax. If we don't do this, what should we do when it comes to dealing with pension and $6.5 billion backlog?
Well, we have to begin to, again, to change course. The course that we've been on for decades now underneath the defined benefit plan hasn't worked. We need to shift over to a 401k, 403b system. We could open that up right now to all statewide employees. It's something that the State University Retirement System has been operating underneath for about 20 years. And I think that a lot of Tier 2 employees would willingly, not being mandated, I think that they would willingly opt into that program because they realize that there may not be any money in that pension fund when they get ready to retire. I mean, they're significantly underfunded, unless it's not managed by the government. And that's what we have to understand, the historical aspect of how we got to where we're at. It's because government had its hand in the cookie jar. The state of Illinois for decades has been able to dip into those funds and rob, that's what I say they've done. They have robbed these people that have worked for the state, fulfill their part of the obligation, and they've been dipping into that and stealing from these people's pension funds. And to me, that's downright criminal. They shouldn't do that. But we have to also understand we cannot continue down that path. We have to change course as rapidly as humanly possible so that we send a message to the different credit agencies like Moody's that we're not going to keep making poor fiscal choices. And it is going to take probably decades to get out of that. So I'd like to see us transition over to that as soon as humanly possible, then work towards a constitutional amendment to get it implemented for all future employees. But we have to honor that obligation to all current and past employees as well.
How does the Libertarian Party, right, compete in a state where we're probably, we can lay good money on it, that we're going to see the most expensive gubernatorial race in U.S. history? The old record, I believe, $210 million, will probably be around $350 million. When you have two candidates like Rauner and Pritzker and their financial status, how does the Libertarian Party compete in the media when they are constantly – by the way, you didn't have any toilets taken out of your house for lower property taxes, did you?
No, but if I did, I would have taken them out myself.
So, which is, that's interesting. I think that's pretty good. So what do you think? How do the Libertarians get in here and compete in this kind of market with $350 million of money sloshing around in the state for media buys?
You know what? It's really sad, and it's a tragedy that we have people like this, aristocrats, that are essentially purchasing the office. That's what they're doing. And they're not talking about how good of a candidate they are, and they're not standing on their platforms and their policies. And I think that this is where, as a libertarian, we compete. People are tired of that. They're sick and tired of just the mudslinging and back and forth. Look, Rauner's not perfect. Pritzker's not perfect. I'm not perfect. At the end of the day, we're human beings. But they're spending all their money and all their time and energy talking about how they're not the other person. I don't want to do that. If I'm voted into office, I want people to vote for me, not because I'm not the other guy, but because they believe in me and they believe in my principles. And I think that people are hungry for that, and we're seeing that because we've got, 50% of the state who are, consider themselves to be independent. Republicans and Democrats speak for a minority of the populace. That's a fact. Okay, the majority of us are independent. We're actually very libertarian-minded. And if you speak with a lot of moderate Democrats and moderate Republicans, they'll even admit, maybe not on air, but they'll admit, yeah, I'm actually pretty libertarian. Because we don't want the government in our lives. And when people are hearing that message, like on the Tom Miller Show and on NBC and on Fox, whenever I'm doing these interviews, when they hear that and they see that, it's spreading like wildfire across the state. And that's how we're going to compete. It's the message, it's the platform, and it's the principles.
How much do you worry about splitting the vote with McCann, you, and Rauner? It's interesting because I thought of this when you were talking about 50% say I'm independent, right? I mean, do you worry about splitting the vote and having a worst-case scenario for the state of Illinois as an outcome? Do you worry about it?
No, I don't worry about it. And here's why I don't worry about it. Number one, a lot of people they're kind of misguided in believing that libertarians are splitting the vote. Okay, historically, we'll kind of split it about evenly on both sides, because if you look back at the primaries, Bruce Rauner nearly lost his. He didn't do quite well. And J.B. Pritzker, had he not had the money bank that he did, there's a lot of people that are, they're Democrats that wouldn't have voted for him. And there's quite a few people that have came over to the platform that are messaging the page, that are hitting me up on Twitter and on Facebook saying, hey, I was a Democrat, but I can't vote for that guy. I'm not taking votes. I'm not splitting votes. I'm earning votes. And that's what we ought to be doing as candidates. We shouldn't be getting votes because of how much money we spend or how much money we funnel over to different organizations. We should be earning people's vote based on our work ethic and based on our principles and our platforms. And that's what I'm doing. So I'm not splitting any vote. I'm just out there earning every single vote that I get.
I was reading the Associated Press story about McCann talking about, hey, man, what about these debates? Have you been invited to a debate or forum on the gubernatorial race? I mean, what's that look like for you?
Yeah, I did. I just got a phone call yesterday from NBC, and they're hosting a forum on September 20th. They said that Pritzker and Rauner have already confirmed for that. So I told them, yes, I will definitely be there. And Sam McCann, I saw that there was an article out yesterday, I believe when it came out, that he was going to be putting together debates. and said that, well, in the article it said that Rahner and Jackson had not yet confirmed.
Right.
Well, nobody asked me, so I'll publicly say right now, I'll confirm. I'll be at any debate, anytime, anywhere.